We're trying to create a unique transcript because, believe it or not, unique is good, all right? So what I want to do today is to review key concepts about a transcript. These are things I've been teaching in classes past. We're going to do a quick review, and then we're going to apply what we have learned to unique situations, okay? The first thing you need to know is, how do you determine high school credit, right? You can give credit for high school level work at any age. This is really helpful if you have a gifted child. You can give them high school credit for math, science, or foreign language at any age, as long as it's Algebra 1 and higher, biology and greater, foreign language using a high school curriculum. Next thing, you can give high school credit for the number of hours worked when they are high school age. This is super helpful if you're on the other end of the spectrum. If you have a struggling learner, let's do a little exercise here for a moment. What would happen if your struggling learner was in high school? Every single class they took would be put on the high school transcript. They count credit based on the number of hours worked at student age. And that's what you get to do too. So if you're looking at counting credit for your struggling learner, or for a regular learner who's doing, like, I don't know, art PE, you don't have a curriculum, how do you know how much is a credit? You count or estimate hours. Let me give you that estimation. One credit is 120 to 180 hours of work, which equates to about 1 hour a day or about 5 hours a week. Or one textbook is one credit, right? That will help you to determine credit at high school age. A half a credit is about 60, 75, 90 hours, depending on who you listen to, is a half a credit. Or if it, the textbook says it's semester, or, you know, IEW says this is a semester poetry class, okay? And then you will know it's a half a credit. You can give your child credit for college-level work at any age. College-level work is they pass a CLEP test. They pass an AP test. They do dual enrollment. They are in the community college. Each class, their one whole college class equals one whole high school credit. All right, let's talk about how do you determine grades. We're going to go through this really quickly, right? A grade of A means mastery. Your child has met your high expectations, or they have high test scores, or the child loves the subject. If they love piano, it's an A. Don't create a test for it, okay? Or the mom is not annoyed, right? They've done what you've asked. There were no wars that have broken out over this thing. A B means it's pretty good. Definitely in your mind, not worth an A. Aren't you glad you homeschool though? Probably better than, you know, a counterpart. Or the parent is somewhat annoyed. It's like, well, that did not go as expected. My child did not cooperate to the degree necessary to make me not annoyed with the whole class. C is when it was really awful, really gross. Parent is annoyed, parent is disappointed. It was a terrible experience. You blame yourself. What have I done wrong, you said. But here's the thing. The child went on to the next level. So if you were working in Algebra 1, it was a horrible, terrible, no good, very bad day. But you're going to go into geometry next. Okay? That's how you know it was a C. Now, let's move on to the key concepts about creating a transcript for your unique child. The first and most important thing is that you are always honest and true. Honest and true is a little harder than you would think because our children are very unique, right? And you're thinking, but it's so weird. What my child did was so weird. I can't be honest about that thing, right? I want you to be honest and true on your transcript. If your child really, truly did 3 credits, 4 credits of fine art every single year, that's honest and true. You put that on the transcript, okay? Many times, it's helpful for us to think, what would a school do in this situation? We try not to compare ourselves to schools. But and they certainly aren't educating in the most efficient and effective way. But at the same time, it can give you some guidance. If they're doing it, it must be okay for me to do it, okay? So for example, when they have a struggling English student, they're put in English class at the high school. They don't call it American literature. They call it language arts. It's named an appropriate class title, but at the same time, the child is given credit for it. So think about, okay, if we were dealing with that situation in public school, what would happen? Let's apply that to our homeschool. The next thing you want to do is make sure that you're speaking the love language of colleges. So no matter what happens, you're translating it into grades and credits, which are the love language of colleges. The only thing they understand is grade numbers and credit numbers, and our job is to give it to them. What I don't want you to do is change your normal, natural homeschool. What I do want you to do is to translate that. I do want you to also think simply about what we're doing. Sometimes we overcomplicate things. It's like, well, what if I started weighting grades? Wouldn't that be super fun? And I'm here to tell you it would be super complicated. So let's keep things simple, all right? Another key concept is to use an acronym for outside classes, right? So based on where they're taking an outside class, you would think about a three-letter acronym for the place where they took the class. For bonus points, if you use CC as part of your acronym for community college, they will understand that better. So HCC, Highline Community College, every time they see the CC together, they'll know, oh, they took that at a community college, okay? So for using the acronym, you put it before the class title, and then you use the class title, and then you will define the term, the HCC term, at the bottom of the transcript so they know what they're doing. I read a lot of transcripts every week, and I have to tell you, having that three-letter acronym before the class title really helps. When you're skimming something, you immediately know they took three different kinds of outside classes. One of them was at the co-op or the community college, and I should be expecting to see another transcript from there. And it really helps colleges. When you are doing an outside class and they are providing a transcript, you can make your homeschool transcript the sum of all of their educational experiences. You become the clearinghouse for all of their education. That way they see the big picture of your child instead of here's a transcript, here's a transcript, here's a transcript, and they have no idea what the child really looks like. By putting it all onto one transcript, that can help them to see the whole child. However, when you do take an outside class, they'll give your child a grade that you have no control over, and you have to put that accurately on the transcript with the same grade. You can adjust their grade to your grading scale. If they say 4.0, you can say A, right? But you have to keep it the same grade. All right, just so you know, co-op classes are a suggestion. They don't give you a real transcript, right? They give you a report on that one class and what the teacher thinks perhaps your child should get. But it is a serving suggestion. They see your child one day a week, you see your child 5 days a week, and you have more information to give an accurate grade. Next key concept is you want to avoid double dipping. It is just as gross on a transcript as it is when it's avocado dip, okay? Double dipping means this 120 to 180 hours that my child did in music, I'm going to call it two different classes. I'm going to say that she did music that was violin and music that was piano, and I'm going to put them both on the transcript, and that is double dipping. You do not do that. Basically, here's the thing. Each hour counts for one class. You do that, and you're good to go. I want to tell you what is not double dipping. It is not double dipping to have something that is an activity and a class. I know that to be true because I actually went to public high school, and in my public high school, I had choir every single year. It said choir. It said choir, it said choir, and it said choir every year. It didn't say choir 9, 10, 11, 12, right? Every year, my activity list said choir. I was a member of the Bellevue High School choir, okay? It is not double dipping to have those activities and also on your transcript. And in fact, one of the, I don't even think I'm going to mention this later on, so one of the little tips for making a unique transcript is to look over your transcript when you're done and try to see if there's any activities on there, right? So if you've used the acronym HCC, you should have on your activity list students attended Highline Community College dual enrollment program. That's an activity, okay? You also go backwards. You look at your activity list, and it says baseball team, right? And you're saying, oh, let's make sure we put that activity on the PE class because my child has PE. They've exceeded expectations in the PE class, right? So you want to make sure that you have looking back and forth. You do not double dip, but it's okay to have something be an activity and on the transcript as well. Okay, the next best friend key concept is a cover letter. When you send a transcript, usually you're sending it with a letter that says, hey, here's my transcript, right? But you can also use that cover letter to your advantage. A cover letter can cover any craziness that has ensued in your homeschool. A craziness can explain a 4.0 GPA if you, you know, use educational words to say you're a mean mom, right? You say, I expect mastery from my students. I expect them to demonstrate delight-directed learning and a love of learning. We work hard to, you know, whatever, literature-based curriculum. That sort of thing can explain why your child has a 4.0 GPA. So a cover letter will cover craziness. That is what is seen before the transcript. So you can explain, before they even see the transcript, you can explain why there are D's and F's for community college or public school classes, and then all of a sudden you have A's in your homeschool class. You can explain why did that happen before they even see the transcript, okay? It can explain why you have so many credits. You can say we homeschool year-round, right? It can also explain any major issues that have happened. There's a huge gap. Let's explain why. Major illness, major psychological issues, you can do that. When you're writing the cover letter, though, try to put it in the best possible light. I spend a lot of time helping people do that. Let's put a positive spin on that. I am, you know, what is the character in Inside Out that's always positive? It's kind of like me. So I can help people make it positive, you know. Oh, my child flunked out of school. They were so not challenged, and we needed to make sure that they were taught appropriately at their level and challenged at the same time, and now they've been successful, and here's why, right? So we can make it a positive thing and highlight the positives. The other thing you want to do is to see the whole child, right? We are so used to homeschooling our children. And when we homeschool our children, they are like right here, you know? And it's really hard to see the forest through the trees sometimes. We see their failures up close and personal on a day-to-day basis. We see attitude up close and personal on a day-to-day basis. Did you know that attitude does not go on the transcript? Shocking. That's right. So you want to make sure that you're looking at the whole kid. I'll tell you a story about my son Alex when he was swimming, and I think he was 7 years old, and my girlfriend looked at him and she said, man, that kid is so skinny, it looks like he's been in Auschwitz or something. And I was like, what? Alex is my chunky kid. He was born like a bowling ball. He was ginormous, you know? And so with 9 pounds, 4 ounces, and I'm 5'2". And so all this time, for 7 years, it's been like, oh, Kevin wants a snack. Well, go ahead, Kevin. Hey, Alex, let's go do this, you know, so that he wouldn't overeat. And all of a sudden, he ended up being so skinny that I had to start feeding him peanut butter sandwiches. So, it wasn't peanut butter sandwiches. He's allergic to peanut butter. Anyway, so we were losing track of where our child was because we were remembering what it was like when he was little. And the same thing can happen when you have a high schooler. You're like, oh man, he's really got some major dyslexia going on, right? Well, you forget that now he can read and write just great, you know? And so in your mind, you're thinking, well, let's give some really rotten grades for English, when actually that was not necessary at all. All right, so you want to see the whole child. Now, let's apply these key concepts to situations that feel like you're the only person in the whole world that this could have happened to. The first situation is when people have really, really horrible grades. They have flunked school, D's or F's, horrible grades, right? The first question you have to ask yourself, was it a real school? Okay, you are a real school, you give a transcript. Real schools give a transcript. Schools that are just classes but not a school, they will give you a report on how the class went, but they don't give you a transcript. So like the Potter School, some of these online classes, they'll give you feedback, a co-op, they'll give you feedback on how your child did, but they're not giving a transcript. It's not a real school. Now, at home, when you're homeschooling a class, when your child is doing horrible, I do not recommend that you give them a D or an F. I recommend that you just drop that class like a hot potato. It's like it never happened. Did you know you do not have to put a big W for withdraw on your homeschool transcript? You don't have to indicate failure at all. You can just like, you know what? That didn't work out. We're just going to pretend like that bad boy never happened. Okay? If your child is getting a D or an F and it's in a core class, that actually indicates not a failure on the part of the child, but a failure on the part of the curriculum, right? So within a month or two of school starting, if your child is really failing, you change that curriculum if it's a core class, because it is not working. If the child has a D or an F in a public or a private school and you're pulling them out to homeschool, there's a couple of things that you can do. You can repeat the class, but you kind of want to prove that you've repeated the class. You want to provide a course description or an SAT subject test that shows that, okay, it stunk in public school, but we've actually learned Algebra 1, and here's what we did, and let me provide a test score so that you can see that my child now knows Algebra 1, okay? You can also explain that in a cover letter. We've talked about that briefly. You can just say, you know what? They were not challenged in school. My child hated it. They were bullied. They were beat up. Whatever the truth is, you put it on there, and then you can say, we came home. The lights went on. The love of learning came back. We used a curriculum that was appropriate for my child, and they are thriving, which is, frankly, often the case. If you have really horrible flunking grades, that might be the one time when I do not suggest you put all the classes on your homeschool transcript. You will still have to provide the transcript from the public school. Somebody is going to find out that they flunked, but at the same time, you don't have to put it on your homeschool transcript. So here's what it looks like from a college admission advisor perspective. This kid flunked out. Look at how much better they are. Look at how we can prove that they're college ready. It's a good investment. We really like people that have come from diverse backgrounds. This child has come from a diverse background. Let's make sure that they can do well now, okay? It is not a bad thing when you have turned it around. It is a bad thing when they flunk out of high school. It's not a bad thing when they start homeschooling and become successful. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Now let's talk about delight-directed learning. What happens when you are unschooling or excessive amounts of Boy Scouts, they got the Eagle Scout, or 99% of your homeschooling is through 4-H. What do you do? What do you do? You grab a sticky note. That's what you do. You use one sticky note for every experience that your child has. Every Boy Scout badge, every 4-H project gets one sticky note. You name the project. You say about how many hours. It goes right on that sticky note. About how many hours did you spend? Were you happy? Now listen, I know that sometimes those 4-H projects are pretty annoying, but if they got a ribbon of any kind, it's an A, okay? You want to put down what you expect their grade to be, and then you brainstorm on the sticky note, what subject area might that be, okay? As you're thinking about Boy Scouts, some of those things are actually fine art, woodworking, that's a fine art, right? Or maybe it's photography. Photography is a fine art, right? So you put all of your little sticky notes for all of your badges, all of your unschooling projects that you've been doing. your field trips, your hands-on, the weaponry that they have made. I have one kid that does weaponry all the time. Not my family, but one of the clients that I'm working with. And you put them all in these little sticky notes. And then you do what my husband calls, you put them into affinity groups, right? You're grouping all of these things together by subject area, okay? So you put all of your sticky notes about fine art over here. You put all of your sticky notes about PE over here. You put all of your sticky notes about technology over here. When they add up to the right amount of hours, that's when you call it a credit, okay? So that is how you include delight-directed learning using the sticky note strategy. The delight-directed learning is a great way to exceed expectations, right? Colleges want somebody that is really unique. In a public school, okay, so let me tell you a story. Once upon a time when I was in public school, I had a teacher that taught Polynesian history because he liked to go to Hawaii every year and he could write it off, okay? We are not limited by the interests of our, you know, teachers. We are completely unlimited. Our child can do delight-directed learning in almost any area. I have a brother-in-law who taught in the public school. He taught sports communication every spring so he could listen to baseball in his classroom. Okay? He taught the history of baseball in a public high school as a social studies class, right? You have unlimited delight-directed learning. You want to cover the core, but you add the delight-directed learning so that they exceed expectations. All right, the next thing we want to talk about is special learning challenges, because not everything goes smoothly in life. I don't know if you've noticed that. What can you do? So the first thing you want to do is to make sure you're considering the whole person. Is this still a problem, yes or no? It may not be. The second thing you want to remember is that having a challenge in one area should not affect the rest of school. An easy example for me to talk about is, let's say your child has dyslexia. They struggle with reading, okay? For 1 hour a day, you're struggling with reading. They're learning to read. They're learning to write. You're keeping it at their level. It is a challenge. You want to pull your hair out. The rest of the day, though, they can learn everything else without reading. You could get audiobooks for history. You could learn history through movies. They can be doing their PE classes. They can do science by watching a video and doing experiments. You see where I'm going? All of the other subjects are separate. As much as you can take that struggling learner and take the one thing that they struggle with and only have them face their weakness for an hour a day, that's how you retain the love of learning and you retain their self-esteem. Because can you imagine being in a job that you hated for 8 hours a day every single day of your life? That would be a nightmare. If you can just 1 hour a day focus on the thing that you need to teach and then the rest of the time separate their learning challenge for what they need to know, okay? Alrighty. Now, if you are thinking about learning challenges, you always put down what is honest and true on the transcript. If your child is really struggling with English, then you don't call it, you know, literature and composition. Maybe you call their class language arts, right? That's what core classes are in middle school in English, is language arts. If your child is still in sixth grade math, on the transcript, you put mathematics. You don't say calculus, you say mathematics, okay? For those of you who are not really sure where your child is in math because it's that bad and you're working on it that hard, but you're constantly falling behind trying to fill in gaps, when you get close to the end of high school, give them a placement test and see where they ended up in math and then count backwards, right? We ended up in Algebra 1. Therefore, I know the previous year, Algebra 1, the previous year must have been pre-algebra, because we're in Algebra 1. The year before that must have been mathematics, because it was before pre-algebra, okay? So you can count backwards. Now, with special learning challenges, sometimes you'll run into a situation where you feel like they're missing core classes. Again, I don't want you to hold them back in science or history or fine art just because they struggle in math, for example. Right? Math is not the determining factor in what your grade is. I have to tell you, a lot of people say my child can't be in ninth grade because he's not finished Algebra 1 yet, and that is not the case. Okay? So don't hold them back because of one class. Make sure you're moving forward in other subject areas. Okay, let's talk about gifted and advanced children. First of all, I feel your pain. I have had that situation, and it is not as easy as you might think, right? People say, oh, what a great problem to have. No, it's just a problem to have, okay? It is just hard. So you want to make sure that with your gifted child, even though they're like way up here in whatever, you still have to cover the core classes. You still want to make sure that they have biology and chemistry and American history. Make sure you cover that. You can use a cover letter to explain anything that is unusual, right? You can use test scores if needed, because let's say they started Spanish and got really good at Spanish while they were in middle school. You can actually give them a subject test, a high school level subject test in Spanish while they're in middle school, and then you don't have to, you know, worry about them remaining fluent the whole time of high school. So you can give them a subject test to prove that they've known what they know. And you also, again, have unlimited class options. You don't even have to know necessarily what it is that they're learning. I know in my family, we used CLEP test as a subject test for them to take. And I had them look at the table of contents for all of the different CLEPs that were available. And I said, you know what? You just take any of those practice tests that you want to, right? Anything that looks interesting, you just take it. My son passed a business marketing class in CLEP. I have never seen a marketing book in my life. He passed the business law class. I have never seen a law book in my home in my life. I think it was because he loved history, American history, so much that he like had memorized the Constitution. So maybe that has something to do with it. So you're not limited by what you know. You're only limited by the information your children have. And a funny story, it's not really funny, it's pretty pathetic. When I was in college, I flunked. I got a D in two college classes, right? One of them was calculus, and my children both learned calculus in high school, and I have an engineer now, which is hilarious to me. The other class I got a D in was economics, and my other son literally has a college degree in economics. So, isn't that funny? Okay, now the next thing that may happen is your child could be completely normal, neither gifted nor challenged in any way. I have to tell you, when you put a normal child on a transcript, they look so smart. It's crazy. Black and white words make a huge difference to how your child looks. They look great. And here's why. Because when you're making a transcript, you don't put anything about attitude in there. There's no attitude on a transcript. You don't have any failing classes on the transcript. All you have is the good news of your child, right? All you have is what they were successful in. You only have the, it's like, you know, the sausage making, right? We've been through this sausage making crock test of homeschooling high school. It was ugly, it was bloody, and people got hurt, right? But at the end, you had this wonderful sausage on the barbecue, and it tastes delicious, right? Well, that's the same kind of thing with the transcript. At the end, it's like childbirth, right? Childbirth. You forget all the horrible, well, you know, husbands still laugh about it, but you forget the horrible things that happen, and all you remember at that point was, I have a healthy baby, right? That's what making the transcript is like. In the end, these normal kids, they look fantabulous. Now, colleges are used to seeing straight A's from homeschoolers. That does not mean you have to have straight A's, but I don't want to beat yourself up if you have straight A's, okay? The difference between homeschooling and a school is that a school takes kids at a certain age and they plop them here and they move them along, right? So in a school, a kid will lose one math concept and they don't understand it, but the class keeps going. The next year they get a B, the next year they get a C, the next year they get a D, right? That does not happen in homeschooling. In homeschooling, it's like, why aren't you getting it? I need to find resources. I'm going to ask 15 friends. I'm going to put it on Facebook. How do you fill this gap, right? And so we make sure our child learns it before moving on. There's a word for that. It's called mastery, right? We expect mastery from our children. We expect them to, you know, learn. It's a thing. And so that's why homeschoolers may have straight A's on their transcript. All right, next thing is, let's talk about too many and too few credits, right? People will ask me all the time. I got asked this yesterday in a group. How do you know if you have too many or too few credits? Well, first of all, there's very few people that either have too many or too few, because the range of normal is ginormous, okay? A normal child may have 24 credits. They do 6 credits per year in a public high school. Sometimes they do 5 credits per year in a public high school. So normal is 20 to 24 credits, okay? But in a college prep high school, kids can have a 0 period class. They can have an after school class. Sometimes they have 2 after school classes. Sometimes they'll have summer school. Who here homeschools in summer? We have summer school, right? So we can rack up those credits like nobody's business, right? It's also normal then to have 35 credits or 45 credits, right? If your child is doing dual enrollment, they rack up those credits so fast because every whole college class is one whole high school credit. So if your child is in a semester situation in community college, they'll rank up 9 classes that year. I mean, that's a lot, okay? So it is not unusual to have 45 credits in a college prep high school like yours, your normal natural homeschool. Woo, at least that it was college prep. Okay, so if you do have over 45 credits, just kind of look at it and think, okay, so maybe not all of this is really important, right? And you might want to consider taking some things off. So you might want to reduce some of the electives that were just half a credit electives. You might just remove some of the half credit classes just because you don't want to have too many. Or maybe you'll combine them and say, well, all of these fine arts things, we're just going to combine them all into a group and say, you know, music practicum, and it will include all of these different things, right? I will say with the too many credits, I do not recommend that you ever have more than one PE credit per year. I don't think it will gain you anything, okay? More than one fine art class, I think, is a great idea. It shows you have an artist, which, you know, is very unique and wonderful, and people love that. For too few credits, this is people that feel like my child doesn't have enough, okay? Just remember, 5 to 6 per year is enough. But I also want to make you aware that you include your delight-directed learning classes. The things that your child does for fun does not require a textbook. You'll never buy a curriculum for it. They're just doing it for fun. I want you to take a brief moment. Imagine yourself in your kitchen. You have to unload the dishwasher, you have to set the table, you're cooking dinner, naturally you scream to your child, Alex, will you get in here and unload the dishwasher and set the table? What is your child doing when you do that, right? What do they do instead of school, instead of doing their chores? That's usually their delight-directed learning, and that's usually the thing that's going to go on the transcript. The next thing you want to make sure you're doing is not requiring a formal curriculum in order to give them a credit. Formal curriculum is not required for many things. Include their natural learning as well as their delight-directed learning. If they read books constantly, then that's very telling. And then you ask yourself, did they actually meet college admission requirements, right? And if they haven't, then maybe you want to fill that in. But often they have. If they really, 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 truly have not met the requirements and they don't have enough credits, at that point, then you might think about, well, maybe what we need to do is have 5 years of high school. If you do have 5 years of high school, you can arrange your transcript by subject rather than by year. A transcript by subject says, here's the classes we took in ninth grade, here's the classes that we took in 10th grade. That's a transcript by year. A transcript by subject will say, here's all our math classes, here's all our social studies classes. And by doing your transcript by subject, it can kind of mask, it doesn't like shine a big little spotlight on the fact that you took 5 years to do high school. They'll still know, it's not a problem that they know, but it's not like saying, we could not possibly get it all done in 4 years. It's not highlighting the problem. All right, the next thing that can happen is you have the ginormous behemoth classes that are the size of an elephant in a small bathroom, okay? This can happen when your child is doing like a classical conversations, classical co-op, literature-based curriculum. Many times these big behemoth classes, they will include things like history and literature and fine art and critical thinking and Bible, and all of these things are in one class, right? Now, when you do that, usually the curriculum or the class will tell you what classes it is. It will say, this is one Bible credit, one social studies credit, one English credit, and one, I don't know, philosophy credit. So usually they'll tell you what it is. Sometimes you have to do it yourself, and if that's the case, you use the sticky note strategy, and that can help. But when you're using one of those big behemoth classes, it can benefit you if you name the classes the way colleges expect to see, right? So you don't say Classical Conversations Challenge A. You say we did ancient world history, right? And ancient world literature. And that's how you name your classes, specifically to what they are looking for, right? So I guess I did write this down, so this will help. So the first year before your rotation, I usually call that classical literature with ancient world history. The second year of a four-year rotation, I usually recommend calling that medieval world history and British lit, because that's usually the year you do Shakespeare. During the revolutionary period, I recommend calling it American history. Often you're reading American literature because you're doing, which my son could name all of them just like that, and all I can think of is the Declaration of Independence, but there's a lot of American literature that year. And then when you're studying the modern year, the four-year rotation, that's usually when the economics and the government comes in. Okay, does that make sense to everybody? Anybody plausible in here? Okay. All right, now we're gonna talk about some of the hard stuff. Have you ever noticed that bad things happen to good homeschoolers? It is true. I can also tell you that you are not necessarily immune. So as we talk about the major problems that can face homeschoolers, the major emotional problems, divorce, separation, death, the major medical problems that you can face, you suddenly find out you have brain cancer, breast cancer, congestive heart failure, whatever. That can actually happen to you, even as a good homeschool parent, okay? So what I want you to do, if you take nothing else from my lecture today, is to make sure that you're making your transcript and records every year. There is nothing that breaks my heart more than the non-teaching parent coming up to me and saying, my wife just died, I don't have a transcript, what do I do? My child's 18, okay? Breaks my heart. Make sure that you have your transcripts and records ready all the time. Okay, so let's talk about medical problems, right? Occasionally, a child will develop a major medical issue. They've been in a car accident. They have a concussion from football. They can no longer function for school, right? When that happens, your number one priority is the health of your child. End of story. It does not matter how well educated they are, whether or not they go to college, if they don't survive. All right? You are paying attention to the health of your child. Once you know that they're going to survive and you're thinking, okay, now what do I do about homeschooling? If the situation is quite critical, often what I'll encourage people to do is give your child good books to read while they're in the hospital getting chemo, whatever. Make sure that you give them a very nice-looking, very manly, or very cute journal, and you have them journal about their experiences every single day. That covers English. You've got reading and writing. You've got one credit of English. Okay? If the child is capable, the only other thing you can't, like, quickly recover from is math. So if you can have your child work forward one lesson of math per day, that would be awesome. Some kids that are having medical problems, they can't do that, and that's fine too, right? We're just going to be honest and true on our transcript. But occasionally they're able to get their English done and their math done before they're too tired to work anymore. It is also possible to do history and social studies by videos, by watching like Ken Burns shows or whatever. Great way to get history when you're hospitalized. Okay? Just remember that life is much more important than school, and it's much more important than graduation. If a child should not graduate due to medical complications, then you would still be able to recover from that. Once they get better, they can go to the community college, they can get their AA degree, and then they can move forward like it never happened, okay? I was working with one young girl who was in a terrible car accident, and she did have a concussion. She lost all of her math. She had been in pre-calculus and then was in the accident, and she really struggled to add, subtract, multiply, and divide. Lost a lot of other subjects, but her mom was just distraught about the math. And so the mom came to me and she said, well, so now all I get to put is mathematics. And I said, no, let's think about what would happen in a public high school. Everything she had taken prior to the accident would be on her transcript. Pre-calculus would be on her transcript, okay? But then we're going to put down what is honest and true for what happened after the accident. And you use a cover letter to explain, during this time, she was in a car accident, she currently needs some help to get this thing taken care of, but this is what she did before and this is what she did after, and she's perfectly capable of college level work, and let me explain how. Okay? Now let's talk about major psychological issues. That can happen. It is normal for a child to put up some resistance in the subjects that they don't like. It is normal for a child to occasionally say, I hate school. It is not normal for a child to try to run over their mother or to use their cell phone 18 hours a day and forget to do their school at all. It is not normal for a child to be sleeping in bed 24 hours a day. Well, it is normal for a child to sleep in bed until 11 o'clock in the day. Okay? So major psychological issues can happen. We are not immune. Our children live in the world. And even children who are secluded in some way, they can still experience anorexia, cutting, drug abuse, pornography. These major things can happen, and it is not pretty, okay? When that happens, again, your first concern is safety first. It does not matter if I graduate my child on time if they cannot function as an adult. The other thing you need to know is that after the age of 18, you no longer have control over your child. You cannot force them into counseling. You cannot force them to do whatever they need to do to get help. Instead, you have to have them, you know, agree to get counseling or whatever. So when you're facing with a major emotional issues, your job is to make sure that you are parenting with no regrets. You are leaving it all on the field. You are doing everything that you can do to make sure that your child stays alive and stays healthy. Okay? So if that math curriculum is going to make your depressed child take drastic steps, you don't want to teach that math curriculum. You want to get them help instead, okay? If you are facing major emotional issues, steer clear of dark literature. Give good, quality, happy literature. If your child is suffering from some emotional, psychological issue, make sure that the first thing that you look at is technology. Technology has a huge impact on the well-being of children. It can literally cause depression. It can literally cause symptoms of Asperger's. It can literally cause addictions to pornography, okay? So do your research on that and get counseling when you can. If you are pulling your child out of public school because they are depressed, which happens more than you like to think, bullying, stalking, these things happen, that would be a good opportunity for you to go through a process of de-schooling where your child takes a break from formal learning so they no longer are faced with their failure all the time. They become a close-knit family again. They become happy again. I was working with one customer, and she was pulling her child out of school for the first time. I was going to homeschool for the first time. He was in 10th grade. I have never seen a more depressed-looking child in my life. 1 year later, I literally didn't recognize him because he was smiling for the first time I'd ever seen him. So homeschooling can lead to those feelings of closeness. He was hugging his mom and everything. It was really, it was astounding if you could see the before and after. Okay, so with either problem, medical or emotional, you want to make sure you're attending to the health issues first. You also don't want to compare your child to the what ifs. What if my child was still as gifted as he had been? What if my child still was hanging out with this friend who, whatever? Instead, you want to be comparing your child to the average student. And if you can do many of the things that we've been talking about, making sure that you're consistent all through the 4 years of high school, they have one really horrendous year, at the end, they'll still look pretty good. They'll still be a normal child. That's one of the reasons why I encourage people to start strong, so that should the kid get into a car accident, mom develops brain cancer, whatever, you still have everything that you need to move forward in peace. Let me mention one last thing, and then I'll take some, hopefully take some questions, and that is, what do you do when your child is a senior and you're sending transcripts, and it's September of senior year, and they just have started pre-calculus? What do you do about the transcript? So here's what you do. You don't put a grade because they just started the class, right? You use IP instead of the grade. At the bottom of the transcript, you define your term. IP indicates classes in progress. So you put all the classes that they're probably going to take and finish, right? Their English class and their math class and their science class, whatever. Put that on the transcript. You tell them it's going to be a one-credit class. You put the credit right there. You tell them the completion date. They're going to complete it in June, whether it kills me or not, right? But then in place of the grade, you put IP. Now, there are times when kids are in dual enrollment community college, and you don't actually know what classes they're going to take. So you can say what classes are intended to take, INT, intended. You can say what they're registered to take next semester, use a big old R, registered, okay? What they're looking for is the child is intending to take a math and a science and a foreign language. Cool, those are three hard classes. Chances are they're not going to take basket weaving 1, 2, and 3, okay? So that's why you want to put that on there. They're looking, during senior year, that very last transcript, the one you send to the colleges when you're looking for college admission and scholarships, they're looking for senioritis, okay? They're looking for burnout. They want to know that 9th grade was good, 10th grade was looking good, 11th grade was looking good, and 12th grade, they're not taking basket weaving all day long. They're actually taking the core classes that they need to have, okay? All right, so I am ready to take questions. I have 5 minutes for questions. Yes, in the blue. Speak up a little bit more.
Sure. Do you have examples of, say, transcripts, like with the course descriptions, you know, examples of cover letters,
Yes.
Admission essays, that kind of thing, that we could
Great. Yes, actually look at record-keeping examples and everything. Yes, I do. I have that in two different forms. I have my book. It's called Setting the Record Straight by Lee Binns. It's available on Amazon. I think we're sold out. Do we have any left? We have one copy left in my book. Setting the Record Straight is my number one book that people ask for the most. No matter how many I get, I always have one left at the stage. And that has examples of almost everything. I actually prefer for people to use the online program that I have. It's called the Comprehensive Record Solution. And so we made a website for it, comprehensiverecordsolution.com. And you can go there, and it is a sale price that is available on at the conference. So go to my booth, we'll give you the sale price, and we'll give you a tote bag, if you purchase today. The Comprehensive Record Solution does have examples of every course description I wrote, but it also has two other mothers have submitted their comprehensive records so that you can see what other people do that also won full tuition scholarships so that you feel like you have the freedom to do whatever. It has examples of the cover letter, examples of the activity list, examples of the reading list, examples of, school profiles, every piece of paper you could ever be asked for. I will teach you how to write a letter of recommendation yourself. So it's all there, comprehensiverecordsolution.com. Okay, next question. Yes, in the other blue.
My daughter has suffered from neurological eye and ear issues.
Yes.
And so it's been a struggle throughout elementary school and not going into middle
right.
school. We're on the upswing now that I have found specialists that will help me.
Help, yeah.
So it's a good thing.
Yeah.
We as a family have discussed, waiting in to keep her from being miserable
right.
and cramming information down her brain now that she can hear and see us.
Yeah.
to wait an extra year to start high school.
Okay.
How does that okay. look to colleges, if she's an extra year older?
Okay,
does that
great
matter?
Question. Yeah, so basically they're facing some neurological issues throughout elementary school and middle school, and so now they're thinking she can finally see and hear us, and we're a little worried about how do we not overwhelm her by high school by dropping her in, okay? It is normal for a child to graduate high school at the age of 18, 19, or 20, okay? And so you can ask yourself, when do we need to start in order for her to do that? Now, the problem becomes, though, that you can choose her graduation date. However, there's still gonna come that time where the switch goes on and your daughter's gonna think she's an adult. And then she's gonna wanna go, whether she's done with school or not, and that is a struggle that only parents of older teens really truly understand. And so you can talk to her about that, and you can have this plan to get through. The other option, which might be something for you to consider, is, okay, we're gonna make sure that we only teach school like the hard way in three subjects, and everything else is going to be taught the easy way. People don't understand exactly how. There are literally classes in high school that are easier than others. When I took economics in high school, which is probably why I failed economics in college, but when I took economics in high school, we learned about supply and demand, and we filled out the 1040 EZ, and that was it. That was the sum total of my entire economics in high school, right? It's okay for you to have easy classes. So if she's working hard on math, and she is working hard to read, please, short pieces of literature with her own eyeballs. You can supplement that with audiobooks, and then you can do the rest of school easy. You can get a video tutorial for science. You could use teaching with movies for history and do the rest light. Which brings up another interesting question. There is no definition of how much history you have to cover for American history. There is no specific time frame. There's no specific depth at all. And all you have to do is, occasionally watch, the man on the street interviews, right? And listen to some of these young adults who don't know who George Washington is to know that there is no definition of what you have to teach in history, okay? Well, it looks like my time here is up. I'm sorry. And I'm actually not going to be able to take questions in between because I have only 1 hour to have lunch before I have to go to my next class. So I'm really sorry. But my office manager, Anita, is in the booth. And my husband, Matt, knows everything that has ever happened to our two boys. And so if you have questions about our homeschool, he can answer that, or homeschooling in general, and then he can answer that. So thank you.